Committee, and at the beginning of Sefer Shmuel. Bezrat Hashem, we should have next week an opportunity to hear from Shani. Oh, next Monday. So we might have an opportunity to hear from the Black Book again. No, Monday, that's what I'm saying. She's not going to be here next week. But we'll have an opportunity to continue with seeing as the dynasty, as the monarchy develops from David into Shlomo. Then after, it's before Pesach, still talk about the schism within Am Yisrael. After Pesach, we'll start up with Yirmiyahu and then get into Zionism and take a little bit of a jump. So I just want you to try to put things in perspective chronologically, and Rabbi Liebtag is very kind today. I know that...
Put him down.
Okay, it's hard to... Kill it. It's hard to get around to it.
Sorry.
Take a bath. Okay, so we appreciate it because Rabbi Liebtag, I know this takes away from his
preparation time.
It's
music time with
Rabbi. It takes away from his prep, that is time that he likes to give his shiurim, so I appreciate the staff helping us out with the program.
If we remember about a month ago or two or three, we did Sefer Shoftim. Okay? And even though Sefer Shoftim, you thought the topic would be about judges, I tried to show you, anyone remember? That the topic was about kings. In other words, there's a big question in the time of the book of Shmuel, in the letter of the Navi Shmuel, should the people of Israel establish a kingdom, yes or no? And I try to show you that the book of Shoftim, written by Shmuel, the purpose of that book is to establish Tam Yisrael that even though there's dangers in having a king, it's okay to have a king, right? It's okay to have a king because what was the problem of not having a king? If you don't have a king, you don't have a nation. You don't have a people. If you don't have a people, you don't have a people representing God. And even though there's dangers in a king, because a king might lead you away from God, but if you don't have a king, you don't have anything. Or you don't have a nation. If you don't have a nation, you can't be a nation representing God. And according to Chumash and Har Sinai, we represent God not only as people, but also as a nation. Okay. Oh, wait, just one little fun joke just to start. See, no, this is for Rabbi Yamin. I was in a shul, actually it's in Ranana, and they have a Sfer Sa'omer thing. Right? Just like that, for the days. But during the year, what's it saying there? It says, Shiviti Hashem Negdi Tamid. But it's removable. So it's so great, you make a removable Shiviti Hashem Negdi Tamid size. And that was like so cute. What's this done? I just share with you. Is that neat? You can do it. That's like the motto of modern Orthodoxy. That's sort of, I mean, the band. Okay. No, it's removable. Okay. Now back that. That was our mussar for the day. Now back to Sefer. I'm sorry. Now we'll start this year. Sefer. So what I try to show you in Sefer Shoftim is that even though Shmuel, as a religious leader, is so worried about establishing a kingdom, because the only time the people turned to God during the time of the Shoftim was when things were bad, and that motivated them to pray and turn to God, and stopped them from serving other gods. He's worried if you give them a king, they'll never pray to God. And the king will lead them away from God. So what do we gain? God had to answer him, you're right, there's a danger in having a king. But the purpose of the king is to have a nation, to lead a nation. And if you don't have a nation, I don't have a nation representing God. And if we need to be a nation to be a light to other nations, if you need to have a strong central government. That comes though with the danger of you might have a bad king who might lead the people away from God. Therefore, what's going to be the job of the Navi, which is going to take us right to Sefer Shmuel? The job of the Navi will be to make sure that the kingdom that is established will be what type of a kingdom? That first and foremost is good for the country. It means a king that will lead the nation to war, win battles, establish a good society, to make sure the country is prosperous, to be a good political leader. But at the same time, the same king who is successful has to be a king that leads the people in the service of God. You got that? Now, it's usually hard to find both together. Because when someone is successful, who does he usually attribute the success to?
Himself.
To himself. Right? Who else would you attribute to? Right? If to be a somebody and think you're a nobody, that's really difficult. To be a nobody and think you're a nobody, that's simple. That's called the Muslim movement. I'll attack the other side. That's called a real humble person is someone who is a somebody who thinks he's a nobody. Got the idea? And there's going to be one character in the Bible that's going to personify that. And guess who that's going to be? I'll take a wild guess. That's going to be David HaMelech. And what I want to show you is how one of the things in Sefer Shmuel is going to be to explain why is it that David is chosen over Shaul. In other words, we established the kingdom with Shaul, but that fails. And then God picks David. What is it about David that God decides this is going to be the king for all generations? It makes it to Shmuel Esrei, doesn't it? We want Malchut David to return. What is the essence of Malchut David? And why does that have the cutting edge over Malchut Shaul? And in this book of Shmuel, I'm not just going to have the stories of what happened. I need the explanation. What was it that God didn't like about Shaul? And what was it that he liked about David? Understand? Now, if you had to choose a chief, that's why this title. Did anyone get the title? No. Who's our king? What was the title?
Queen Elizabeth
or King David. Who's the chief? Now, when Brits say the chief, who are they referring to? No. Not the queen, yeah, but who's the...
Prime Minister.
Americans have hail to the chief. Don't you have that? Is that still on? From the... still blowing hot air, isn't it? Just turn it off. And listen to the show.
Yeah.
Which one's blowing hot air?
This is one hot air.
Yes, just turn it off, yeah. Okay. And then if it gets too stuffy, we'll turn something back on. I'm doing hot air. I was saying something wrong. I was saying something.
Chief,
that's it. So the chief is the chief rabbi nowadays, who's like the best. He's the spokesperson of a real modern Orthodox Jewry. Like, he's great. His books are awesome. You know, you've heard the chief. So he's like the chief. He's the real chief. And we should have more chiefs like that. Americans should have a chief like that. But the idea is, when we say chief, the idea is, who's at the top of the pyramid? Now, for some reason, the British people understand that having a royal family, there's something good about it. Americans just don't understand it. Agree? It's just against the trend of American thought, because we have a democracy. There's a royalty. Who's sort of royalty? But someone British, it's ingrained in them, because there is something about royalty. Now, what's the advantage of having a royal family? Can someone British explain? What were they thinking? Yeah. And what's good about it? Even before Oliver Cromwell and all the, when he was divine. When was the divine? Remember divine monarchy?
Yeah.
Yeah.
So like, yeah, it used to be looked at as more important because they used to like the royal family was decided by gods and like that.
But the royal family, in addition to that, if the royal family was loved by the people, why was it? Because they dedicated their life to Great Britain. They're not just a symbol, but it's they train their children to be good leaders. And the queen should be benevolent and kind and be good to the people. There's something about a good leader and a royal family that dedicates its existence for the sake of the nation. Now, that rarely happened in practice. But there is something to it. And that's the question. As far as any system of government, the advantage of having a monarchy, and that's why it was so common, is what's called continuity. What brings most countries down are civil wars. And what leads to a civil war? Who's going to run the country? If I have a system that guarantees continuity of government, so instead of a civil war every time the king dies, you have a family feud. But it's a lot easier to contain a family feud than a civil war. So like one or two assassinations are here and there, but you finally have a king. As opposed to a civil war every time, it gives stability and continuity to a country's political system. Now, let's get to our topic. After God tells Shmuel, give them a king, which is the first topic of Sefer Shmuel, okay, what do we need to know? We need to appoint that king. And who is given the job to find the king? Shmuel the Navi. The job of the Navi now will no longer be to run the country, but to make sure the right person's running the country. Who is the first pick? Shaul. Remember, you know the story of Shaul, don't you? We're going to read about it. The reason we picked today's shir for today is because the focus of our shir will be on Parshat Zachor, on the Haftarah for Parshat Zachor. What story is that? Remember Shaul's fight with Amalek? We have to understand what is negative about the behavior of Shaul and what is positive about David. What makes David God's choice? And it can't be only based on how firm each one is. If you understand what I mean? If I'm looking at the report card about things they've done right or wrong, who has a much worse report card, at least according to the Navi? Who did something that was really bad? Shaul did. We'll see his sin with Amalek. anything negative about David, if you read Sefer Shmuel, there's David and Bathsheba, there's no, just read Tehillim and listen to Natan. Yeah. We would never appoint anyone like that nowadays to run a country, run even, for sure not a yeshiva, even a country, with that type of event. But we'll learn from David about Tshuva later on. I want to understand, what is it about David that makes him God's choice? Not only the Tshuva side, but something in the leadership side. That'll be the focus of our shir. Now, what I want to show you is Sefer Shmuel is not only, oh, here's what happened. It's going to present the events to make its point. Now, would you say Shaul was a good king or bad? It's from a political point of view. Was Shaul successful or not successful as a king? Did he succeed or not? Shaul. Okay, give me an example. What did he accomplish? Did he win battles? Tons of them, didn't he? When he took over the kingdom, the country was falling apart. The Plishtim were coming all the way in from the coastal plain. Jordan, Ammon was coming in from the other side. The country was crumbling. Who saves the day? Shaul puts together an army, and he's able to strengthen the borders, establish an army. He puts Israel on the map. He does a great job. And one of his big final wars is the war against Amalek, which we'll talk about soon. When David becomes king, he's even a better general. He accomplishes even more. But what is it about David that's going to make him special? No. The book that says it most is really not Sefer Shmuel. The book that says it most is Sefer Tehillim, and we'll see Divrei Hayamim in a minute. Meaning, what's special about David? When David is successful, what does he do? He thanks God. Where in Tehillim does it talk about David thanking God for his military successes? Where doesn't it? Every time he's in trouble, with it's, remember on Shabbos morning, and with Achish Melech Gat, remember? There was B'shanot Tamodif Nevi Melech. In front of Achish, wasn't it? Or I think it was Achish. Remember in front of Melech Gat, and God saved him. Avrachat Hashem B'choi, something like that. There's Shirat David at the end. And David doesn't only thank God when he's in trouble and saved. He even thanks God when he's not in trouble, like Baruch Hanafshi. Half of Sefer Tehillim, if not most of Sefer Tehillim, is David turning to God when he's in trouble and thanking him when he's successful, when God saves him, and seeing the hand of God in that success, and even thanking God when nothing's wrong. Just seeing God in nature, like most of Pesukei Zimra. How about Shaul? Did Shaul write Sefer Tehillim? Not a word about it. And where you see it the most is how they related to the Mishkan. In the beginning of Sefer Shmuel, what happened to the Mishkan? Who was running the Mishkan in the beginning of Sefer Shmuel? First it was Eli, but he was getting old already. And he had two kids. Eli, Hophni, and Pinchas. How were they? You guys know the story better than I do. Remember? There was corruption in the temple. God was not happy. And the Plishtim came and they destroyed Shiloh. The Mishkan of Shiloh was destroyed. We hear about it in Yirmiyahu as well. We hear about it de facto. What happened to the Aron? It was taken to the Plishtim and finally comes back half a year later to Beit Shemesh, Ramat Beit Shemesh. Ramat Beit Shemesh was a disaster. God didn't like what was happening there and he had to move it up to Tel Stone. If you know the... Take care of the Aron. That was for your teachers. Now, but the Aron remains in Kiryat Yarim. What happened to the Mishkan? Well, they made a small one in Nov. Remember Nov Yerkonim? Mm-hmm. What happened to Nov Yerkonim? Shaul didn't like them for political reasons. They didn't join his coalition. And he finishes them off. So they move them to Givon. Do we see Shaul making any effort to build a Mikdash, to take care of the Mishkan, or Aron? During his time period, total neglect. As soon as David becomes king over all of Israel, that's Shmuel Bet, what's the first thing David does as king? He's appointed king in Hebron, because that's his tribe. As soon as all the tribes of Israel make him king in Hebron, what's the first thing he does? He goes and he takes over Yerushalayim, and he moves his capital to Yerushalayim. And as soon as he establishes his kingdom in Yerushalayim, which is now uniting all the tribes together, because we're on the border between Bnei Leah and Bnei Rachel, you know that? Binyamin is Bnei Rachel, I think. Better be. And Yehudah is, he's the Ben of Leah. Yerushalayim is right on the border between them. And that's going to be a move to unite the north and the south, or Bnei Leah and Bnei Leah. Bnei Leah and Bnei Rachel. as soon as he establishes his kingdom in Yerushalayim, the first thing he wants to do, that was Perek Hei, and Perek Vav, guess what he wants to do? He brings the Aron to Yerushalayim? You know that story, don't you? He brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, and now there's some trouble on the way. Remember, it falls, and it's one of the Haftarot, but then things get better. And when he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, it's a big national celebration. And when he brings the Aron to Yerushalayim, what's Dovid doing? Dancing down there with the people. And who's not a happy camper?
Michal.
But what's her whole name there?
Michal
Bat Shaul. And what's she complaining about? She's British. Speaking of British, right? What did she say? That's... Yeah, exactly. That, royalty doesn't act that way, down with the people. And what's David's answer back? Want to take a look? You can look at it. David answers back, that's why God picked me over your father. You understand the difference? In front of God, David says, I'm a nobody. How does David show he's a nobody? By doing what? By dancing down there with the people. In front of God, he's a nobody. He has to be respected, but when God's in the picture, he's a nobody. And the next thing David wants to do is he wants to build a house for God, the Mikdash. And God says no, or actually God didn't say no, God says, if you know that story, not yet. Remember, you know, God tells David, your generation is one of war. You have to have a son, he'll be Nish Shalom, therefore he's going to name him Shlomo, and he'll build a house for God. And what's David going to do the rest of his life? He's going to get everything ready to build that house for God. We'll read a pasuk about it very soon. In fact, I want to finish this point about David, and then get back to Shaul and Aftarah. They'll give us just enough time. I want to pick just one little section about David because it relates to a little bit about Purim and a little bit about daily davening. I want to give you one example of how when David is successful, he relates all of his success to the God of Israel. Not just in Sefer Tehillim, also in Divrei Hayamim. Look in Divrei Hayamim, in Perek, we'll start with Perek Chavet. Perek Chavet Pasuk Hei. Divrei Hayamim is easier to find than Shmuel, it's the back of the book. Look in Divrei Hayamim, Perek Chavet, Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Chavet. We'll read a couple of Pesukim and then we'll skip. Listen what David's goal is as a king. He's going to tell it to his son. Take a look, and again, in Sefer Divrei Hayamim Aleph, Perek Chavet Pasuk Hei. It's right after he found, remember where there's a plague? Vayomer David El God, he says, give me the plague and don't let me fall to my enemies. Mm-hmm. We quote it in Tachlon. And then God answers his prayer when he bites the field from Arabna the Jebusite, and that becomes Harabite. Mm-hmm. That's chapter 21 in Divrei Hayamim Aleph, that's Perek Chavet. And Perek Chavet, now that he knows the site of the Mikdash, he's going to get working on it. And he's going to get builders to get things ready. Actually, just read Perek Chavet Pasuk Bet, just for the introduction. Who's my reader today? He's got the good loud British, announcing voice. Perek Chavet, yeah, have it, Malka? Yeah. Perek Chavet Pasuk Bet. This is cute. Okay. What's he do, David? Nothing's changed. He needs building material to build a house for God. Who's he employ? The foreign population to chisel the stones. That was just cute. Okay. Pasuk Hei, skip to Pasuk Hei. What does David do? He wants to build a house for God to make his name known. And David gets, even though David can't build a house himself, because God tells him not you but your son, because you're a time period of war, we need some peace. David gets everything ready so that Shlomo can build the Mikdash. Yeah, one more line. David's goal is for his son to build a house for God. One more line. Okay, that was my point. Why is David building his house for God? For God's reputation, to make God look good. Like Yehi Shmei Rabbah Mevarach, like we say in davening. And David's going to spend his whole time getting everything ready. Here he's going to explain to Shlomo why he couldn't build and why he should. From here on, from Perek Chavet all the way to Perek Chavchet, you can look at it later, David dedicates the rest of his life to getting Yerushalayim ready, the Mikdash ready, the workers ready, everything that needs to be done. Skip to Perek Chavchet. Let's just go right to Chavchet. Perek Chavtet, it's the last perek in Dibrei Yamim Aleph. David's going to gather the nation together, and we have a very interesting word here. Perek Chavtet, the whole nation is gathered. Listen what David says. Read, yeah. Good, the Cholakal. David says, in front of the entire nation is gathered, he's going to address Shlomo in public. You follow? It's so embarrassing. Your father's up there and talking to you in public. Everyone's listening. And listen what he tells Shlomo.
Shlomo, b'ni echad b'char bo elokim, na'ar barach, b'hamlacha g'dola, ki lo la'adam ha'bira, ki la'ashem elokim.
Okay. There's a lot of work to do. And who is this bira for? Not for man, but for God. What's bira referring to? The Beit HaMikdash, isn't it? The bira that David is building is referring to the Beit HaMikdash, which we call Yerushalayim HaBira. Now, just a little aside, how does the Megillah begin? Yehudim was in Shushan HaBira. The Jews are supposed to be in the bira in Yerushalayim, and all of a sudden they don't come back. If you know the whole background to the Megillah, in other words, we replaced Yerushalayim with Shushan. And then what did we celebrate Shushan Purim today? It was it's called Venafochu. There's a theme in the Megillah where the Jews replaced Yerushalayim with Shushan, and when the Megillah is over, we have to replace Shushan back with Yerushalayim. Now back to our ship. One more line. What's David say? With all my might and ability, he was a great leader and accomplished a lot of wealth and captured many lands. He dedicates all of his money and all of his wealth, dedicates it to building a house for God. And he presents the temple plans and all the building materials and all the architectural plans. He presents it in a national assembly to the people, charges Shlomo in public to build it and the people to help him. Now, skip to Pasuk Tet. After we have a whole list of the building things, this is awesome. Pasuk Tet. Everyone's happy. And look at the next line. Now, remember, before we get to the next line, the setting. David is standing in public, towards the end of his life, appointing Shlomo, his son, to take over, to continue the dynasty. And he's charging Shlomo, when you become king, your first goal is to build a house for God. I get everything ready for you. Now, the question is going to be, whose name is going to be on the plaque in front of the temple? You follow? It's going to be one of those things. You know, Mr. Schwartz, Mr. Zimmerman, you follow? I'm just speaking names, Tom. It was, who dedicated this building? What are the people, if David did everything, what are the people going to say? This is the temple that King David built. You follow? David doesn't want that to happen because who needs the glory? God. And David's going to make a benediction now, which you know by heart. And I want you to appreciate because the whole theme of the shir is right here. Next line. Pasuk Yud. You can read this fast. It's one word, isn't it? Vayvarech David? Vayvarech David means David blesses the people. And what does he say?
Vayvarech David et Hashem. Leinei kol ha'kal vayomer David. Baruch ata Hashem Elokei Yisrael Avinu me'olam v'ad olam.
First he makes a blessing to God. To God, our God forever. And what's he say? Now continue. Yerav.
Lecha Hashem ha'gdolah.
We have to read it properly. And you read it fine. But if you were bolding this, the word lecha has to be accented and bolded. What's David saying? Lecha Hashem Abdullah. Meaning what? You get the glory. Here's what I built, but who gets the glory? The glory goes to God. This is a somebody who thinks he's a nobody. And David wants to make sure that the Mikdash he built, we attribute it to God being great and not that he being great. Now finish reading it with the right accent now. Pointing out that the glory goes to God and not to David. Okay, sorry. Lecha Hashem. Okay.
Lecha. Hashem hadula v'hadura v'atifer v'anitach v'ahod ki kol b'shamayim v'aretz lecha Hashem hamlecha v'hamiyaseh lechol l'rosh.
One more line.
V'ha'osher v'ha'kavod milfanecha.
Got it? V'osher milfanecha. V'ata moshe b'kol. Understand? You understand what we say every day? Now you understand why we say it every day? Mm-hmm. It's this section that reflects David's key behavior. If I want to understand why is David chosen over, one of the reasons he's chosen over Shaul, first and foremost, he's successful. And boy, is he successful. But what David knows how to do is to take his success and use it in the service of God. And that's just for kings, that's for everybody. The goal in life is not to be a nobody. The goal is to be a somebody who thinks he's a nobody. You should prosper. You shouldn't The goal is not to be someone who takes handouts. The goal is to be someone who can give handouts. The goal isn't to be someone who has to go knocking on doors. The goal is to be someone who can help people. The best way is so that people won't have to knock on doors. You know, to start a company and be able to give jobs. Or to be able to teach people to be self-sufficient. You know, to help society and not pay... Not just to help needy, but help needy not become needy. And that's a leader who can build up an economy, build up a nation, and build them strong. And that's something David, from a political point of view, is able to do. Now, one more line you can keep on reading in Divrei Hayamim, but that's the key point. And again, you say this every day. One more line about David, now go back to Sefer Shmuel. In Shmuel Perachet, go Shmuel Bet, I'm sorry, Shmuel Bet Perachet. Remember, in Parakeh, in Shmuel Bet, in Parakeh, he's made king over all of Israel, and he takes over Yerushalayim. In Parak Vav, he brings their own to Yerushalayim, and that whole story with Micha Bat Shaul. In Parak Zayin, he wants to build a Mikdash, and God tells him, not you, but your son. That'll be Shlomo. And in Parakeh, he wins battles, and he dedicates all the money to building the Mikdash. But at the end of Parakeh, look at the very end of Pasuk Yadalad, we're told that with God's help, he wins all this. Read the end of the last phrase in Pasuk Yud Aleph.
The last phrase?
Well, no, did I say what? In Perek Chet Pasuk Yud Aleph, the end of Yud Aleph. The last phrase. Like before us, Yasher? Vayosha Hashem et David? Who helped David? God. Pasuk Tet Vav, listen how important it is. Vayhi? That's the summary of David's kingdom. That's the highlight of his kingdom. And what are we told? Not only did David build a Mikdash, and that was the center and attribute all of his greatness to God, he takes his wealth and he does Tzedekah Mishpat for his whole nation. But that's the theme from Sefer Breshit, from Sefer Parshat Mishpatim, from Tvarim. David is a strong, powerful king and uses his strength to set up a society known for Tzedekah Mishpat, like Yishael talks about in all the Nevin. When the people wanted a king, what was their motivation? They wanted a king in the very beginning.
To be like other nations.
But in what way? So they shouldn't have to fight wars. Their motivation was not, I don't want a king to bring me closer to God. I want a king so I can breathe, so I can stay alive. I want to have a strong country. I want an army that will fight my battles. I don't want to have to daven all the time. That's what Shmuel doesn't like. But God says, if they don't have a king, they'll have nothing. Therefore, Shmuel's goal will be, let's appoint a king, we can have what they call a win-win. On the one hand, we'll have a strong country. At the same time, we'll have a king who can lead the people towards God. So by building the Mikdash, that reflects what David's true goal is. By doing Tzedekah Mishpat, David's going to turn the nation into a nation that's going to serve God. In fact, in Shmuel Esrei, what's the bracha before? We ask for Kabbash Shofar Lecherutenu. We want to begin the Gula process, and then the first thing that has to happen is Hashivu Shofteinu Kvar Rishona. Let's get our judges back, and what's the Chatimah there? Medlach Leib Tzedakah Mishpat. La Mashinim is a later add-on. The next bracha is what? For the tzaddik, no, it's the people should be tzaddikim, no, it's the people should teach Torah, learn Torah. And then we have rebuilding Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim Yerchal and Bonei Yerushalayim. Then we have Etzenach David Avdecham Eretz Tzmiach, then we have leadership like David, and then Shema Kolein. But that's how we end Shema Nesra every day. It's that thing that's what we're referring to, that there's a process of Gula, and the height of the process is leadership that knows how to fulfill those goals. Not a leader just to be a leader, but a leader to make the country strong and powerful and successful, but to take that success and channel it to do Tzedekah Mishpat and to make God's name known. Now, that was the first half of this year. That's what's so good about David and why he's chosen. Now, later on in David's life, or there's issues in David's life. That's the story of David and Bathsheba. But David, unlike most people, admits his guilt. He does tshuva, tilim nun aleph, if you know it. That's a different topic. That doesn't take away from his leadership capabilities. In fact, Chazal say that's great about him because I can learn from David also about doing tshuva, the whole process of tshuva. And there's tons of parakim and tilim about that as well. And people can make mistakes, then they can learn from their mistakes. Now, Chazal say that they exaggerate. He wasn't as bad as they said he did. Maybe there's an exaggeration because how great he was. But Navi picks on him. But that's a side topic. The main thing is, I'm trying to show you, is that David's chosen not because he's the biggest tzaddik. David's chosen because he's a great leader, but he's a leader who solves the problem and the inherent danger of having a king, where the king's main goal is not to, where the king's goal is not to have power, but the goal of the king is to be a leader, to be successful, to be prosperous, but how you channel that prosperity, one, for the good of the people, as a model nation, doing tzedek mishpat, and secondly, building a mikdash, which will make God look good, and attributing your greatness to God. We see that in Tehillim and Divrei Hayamim. That's David. Now, let's see the flip side about Shaul. We have a commandment in Parshat Zachor, we know that, don't we? To do what? To wipe out Amalek. We're familiar? Who's commanded to wipe out Amalek? But in general? We have every individual as a chiyuv to remember what they did to us. How does that chiyuv go? Zachor. Asher Salcha Amalek. That doesn't say that you have to kill them. That means you have to remember what they did to us. But who's commanded actually to do the job? Only a king. Why? There's certain laws that only apply to a nation. And the reason why is simple. When we fight Amalek, what was so bad what Amalek did to us? Are we familiar with what Amalek did to us? What's Chumash say? Remember Asher Kocha Baderach? No. When did they attack us? If you know the story in Parshat B'Shalach, we read it a couple weeks ago, right? We run out of water. We're in Rephidim. We run out of water. And the people complain for water. And God says, Moshe, there's water in Har Sinai. Moshe goes to Har Sinai, hits the rock. And Har Sinai becomes the source of water. And all the strong people who can still move zoom to Har Sinai to get the water. And slowly the camp is going to move from Rephidim back to Har Sinai. Or to Har Sinai. With the strong people getting the water and the weaker people coming from behind. When is Amalek attack? Remember? And that's an example. That's what we say in Parshat Zachor. What did Amalek do? They attacked you from behind. And who's that Yirei Elohim? Amalek. In other words, Yirat Elohim all through Sefer Breshit. There's lots of examples. Yirat Elohim is what's called basic moral behavior. Yeah, you can give me some examples. Remember Avram and Avimelech? Avimelech takes Sarah, doesn't she? And what's Avimelech ask Avram? What were you thinking? Why'd you lie? What did Avram answer back? I thought there's no Yirat Elohim in the city. Yes. People without Yirat Elohim would kill a husband to take his wife. Because we didn't expect Avimelech and the Plishtim there to be to know our God. But we expect them to be moral and just. A society that doesn't have moral and just behavior is no Yirat Elohim. The Miadot HaIvriot, right? The midwives. Irregardless of who they are in Pshat. But what were they commanded to do? At childbirth, to make sure to make sure they're stillborn. Right? To make sure they don't survive childbirth. That's immoral. What's it say about them? Vatiren HaMiadot Elohim. They fear God and they do something immoral. But the best example is Yosef and his brothers. Yosef is pretending to be not Jewish, isn't he? Mm-hmm. He's the viceroy of Egypt. And the brothers come, and he says, you guys are spies. He puts them all in jail and tells them, send one brother back, and all of you, the other nine, stay behind until he brings Binyamin back. Remember? They're all in jail, and no one volunteers. What does he say after 3 days? You know what? Change of plans. He says, et elohim ani yarei. Means what? He tells his brothers, et elohim ani yarei. And he's not blowing his cover that he's Jewish. Because what's he saying? I'm a moral guy. You know what? Just leave one brother behind. You all go home. All go home. Feed your families. Take care of what you need. And just leave one brother behind and bring me Binyamin. And you can prove yourself. And how does he introduce his change of heart? That I'm a nice guy? He says, Et Elohim Ani Yarei. You'll look it up later on. But consistently, in Sefer Breshit and later in Chumash, Yirat Elohim is moral behavior. What does an Amalek have? Amalek immoral. How does Amalek make a living? Amalek, there's nowhere, if I could draw a map, but you can't see it. If you have a map of the Middle East, can you find where Amalek lives? You'll never find them. Why?
They're nomadic.
They're nomadic. How do they make a living? If you have a country, you have a field, you make a living. How does Amalek make a living if he's a nomadic tribe? They're pirates in the desert. They attack travelers. They don't attack armies. They attack unprotected people. How can you protect yourself from Amalek? You can't. You can maybe pray. You can travel in a caravan. Watch westerns. You understand? But Amalek attacks unprotected people. They're not an enemy of us, they're an enemy of God. They're God's enemy, because Amalek's behavior is antithetical to what God expects from men. It's like the worst of the bunch. Now, we have to remember what they did to us. Like, how come we have to remember that we were slaves in Egypt? Remember Chumash? So that we don't miss, when we become a nation, we read that in Parsha Mishpatim 2 weeks ago. You know what it feels like to be a stranger. You know what it feels like to be mistreated. And therefore, when you become a country, don't you dare do that to migrants in your country. We take a negative experience and we learn from it and we're sensitized by it. And that's why we have to remember Yitzhak Mitzrayim every day that we were strangers in Egypt and we were mistreated. So we don't do that to others. When in Judaism, when you're commanded to remember something, you remember something so that you don't do it to others. I take a negative experience and redeem it by using that negative experience to be a better person. Now, every individual has to remember what Amalek did to us so we don't even think of doing that to anybody else. Because there's a tendency in Ask Any Hasidic Sharon. There's a latent Amalek in every one of us that we have to wipe out. That's how, and they're right on the mark. It was at a Mahshati level, like, there's a dangerous Amalek inside of every one of us, and you have to uproot it. You have to totally get rid of it. There's a tendency to take advantage of other people and be mean. And as a Jew, when Amalek sees someone unprotected, what do? A quick buck. When a Jew sees someone unprotected, what do? They help them. That's the difference between Jewish and being not Jewish. Now, on a national level, who can defeat a phenomenon like Amalek? Who can wipe it out? If I go back to modern history, who defeated piracy on the high seas in the 1800s? You learn that in your world history? No, all European countries were trading, things were moving, but nothing was moving because the pirates kept on attacking ships. The whole shipping routes were ruined. There were pirates on the high seas. There's movies about them even. No, you might have seen them. Who got rid of it? Where's my British, right? Wasn't the British? What? The British Navy, wasn't it? The British Navy did it. Of course the British did it. What enabled the British to do it, and not the Portuguese or the Americans at the time? What did they have that no one else had? They had a strong army and a strong navy. But what enabled? There's certain things a country can do that individuals can't do. Phenomena like Amalek can only be defeated by?
Monarchy.
By what?
Monarchy.
But by a monarchy. And what does Chumash tell us to do? Remember what Amalek did to us? When you have peace from all your enemies around, and you have a nation, and you have a country, and you've solved your own problems, you still have a responsibility to the international community. And therefore, if you have a strong army, you can use your army not just to protect yourself, but also to protect the highways and phenomena like Amalek. Now, where is Israel located? Right next to a major international highway. You ever see it? The road from Egypt to Israel? Through the Sinai? Sinai is a great hangout for Amalek. That's where they were when we came out of Egypt. Yeah, the open roads in the deserts between countries is the hangout for Amalek. If we have a strong country near that area, what are we commanded to do? And therefore, now we finally have a monarchy. We have a strong king with an army, Shaul. Defeat Amalek. Now, Amalek at the time of Shaul is still evil. God says, Achataymet Amalek. Remember when Shmuel kills Agag? What's he say? Kashir shiklad nashim chavecha, ken tishkam nashim imecha. We're not punishing Amalek because we were evil in the past. The phenomenon of Amalek is continuing in the time of Shaul. They're still robbing people. We see it later on with David. When David's fighting a battle, they come to Tziklag, and where does Amalek attack? They attack the home front when the nation's at war. They attack the women and children. They go to the battlefield after the battle's over, and they start stealing jewelry from the dead soldiers. If you know the story with Amalek and Shaul, that's what they do. They're parasites on society. And God commands Shaul to get rid of that phenomenon. You have a king now, you're God's people. Amalek is an enemy of God. You have the ability to fight Amalek. Get the job done. That's our commandment. Now that you have a country, a nation, use it to get rid of evil. Even if things are quiet by you, you still have an international responsibility to keep the highways open and free from phenomena like piracy. Now, Shaul is given the job, but because the people of Amalek are stealing goods, there's a special law that when you fight Amalek, what can't you do? You can't take
their spoils.
Why? Because what are you basically trading? If you take the spoils, you're taking stolen goods. And if you take from Amalek, you're basically the next line, and it's called a food chain. They stole, and then you take from them. Instead, what do you do? You don't know who the owners are. They might have killed the owners. So you dedicate it to God. Or you put it in what's called cheren. You shouldn't... We don't want to do anything with that. That's called... That's... It's out. He says, don't touch it. Don't take the spoils of that battle. Or if you can, give it back to the original owners if you can. But you can't take the spoils. And Shaul is commanded to go fight Amalek. Remember that? Now, open up the Haftarah for this week. Yeah. Where's that? We're going to read this on Shabbos, aren't we? I think so. Is that the Haftarah for Parshas Zachor? Open up Shmuel Aleph, Perek, Tet, Zayin. Tetvav. Perek, Tetvav, and Shmuel Aleph. Shmuel Aleph, Tetvav. The commandment to fight Amalek. We're not going to read the whole thing. I want to pick out one topic. Shaul is commanded to fight Amalek, and they fight Amalek, don't they? And they win the battle. What did they do wrong? They were commanded not to take from the shalom and to wipe everything out. What does Shaul do? He keeps Agag alive, and he takes from the the good sheep. Why is he doing that? What's he planning to do with Agag? Anyone know? Why is he keeping Agag alive? Because he's a nice guy? Guys never stop, brave heart. You know what he wanted to do? We'll see in a minute. He wanted to kill him in public. But what Shaul wants to do is, after he defeated Amalek, he wants to have a national celebration. We'll read about it in a minute. He's going to gather the nation in Gilgal. That's where the nation gathers at the time. And in public, what's he going to do? In front of the entire nation, he's going to celebrate this victory and kill Agag in public. Make a big deal about it. But if you're inviting so many people, what do you need? You need food. Where's the food going to come from? Oh, we have it from Agag. Now, we're not going to take it for ourselves. Who are we going to dedicate it to? Oh, we're going to say, this is a korban for God. We'll call it a korban shlamim. And after we give God the high cholesterol, remember? You take the blood and the fat. What do? Well, we get to have the leftovers. Now, it's a great halachic loophole, if you understand. But what's Shaul missing? He's missing the whole point. Now, take a look in Shmuel Aleph, and take a look in, let me show you what I'm talking about. In Perek, and by the way, you'll see, Shaul is convinced that he's right. Shaul is sure he's doing the right thing. He knows he's doing the right thing. He doesn't understand the depth of this halacha, of what Shmuel was telling him, that you can't celebrate that way. Of course, Shmuel's not invited to the celebration. Listen what God tells Shmuel. Give me a... You guys have a Tanachim? Yeah, take a look in Shmuel Aleph, Perek Tetvav, Pasuk, when he comes back. Here, he cries all night long. Here. Pasuk Yudbet. That Pasuk Yudbet says, Vayashkim Shmuel Likrat Shaul Baboker, Vayugad Shmuel Emor, Basho HaKarmela Hinei Mitziv Lo Yad. What does he do? He's told that Shaul is going to Gilgal. He's coming from the Carmel. He's coming from the mountain range, from the Negev. He's coming to the mountain range. Our whole mountain range is called Eretz HaKarmel. Carmel means the fruitful land. And they're going to gather in Gilgal, wherever that might be. That's where they made him king. It's a national gathering place. And he named it Siblo Yad. You know what that means? What's a Yad? Like Yad Vashem? He's making a memorial. He's making like Yad Avshalom. Shaul is going to make a memorial for this victory. And who's invited? We'll see in a minute, the entire nation is invited. Except Shmuel, of course. And Shmuel is going to come and ruin the party. And God tells Shmuel to go beat him over there. And Shmuel tells him, no, you didn't fulfill the mitzvah properly. And what Shaul say? I did it. And Shmuel says, you didn't. Remember, it goes back and forth. And says, you're not listening. Now, what happens when someone tells you you're wrong and you've done this with your parents? You know you're right, but they insist you're wrong. Okay? So you could argue forever, but why bother arguing? There's an easier way to get out of the argument. You know what? What do you say? You're right, okay. Now can I have the credit card? So, okay, I'm sorry, you're wrong. It's easy to say chatati if you don't mean it. If you really don't mean it, sometimes you say, okay, I'm wrong. Okay, so I said I'm wrong. Do I think I'm wrong? No. Okay, I'm wrong, but let's get on with the show. You understand what I mean? I'm wrong, but give me that now. Now, there's a title of a book like that. At least it's like, Mommy, I wish you were dead, but first take me to the mall. Wasn't there a saying like that? No, a kid has an argument with his parents. You get angry, and then you say, but before you Before I kill you, drive me to the mall. No, sorry about that. No. Listen, I'm just using that for an analogy to understand what he's doing. I want to show you what Shaul says when he says chatati. He said, remember Paro says the same thing. Remember? Paro says, chatati l'Hashem, and the next line is, v'tasanat chatati. Got it? Okay, I'm sorry. Right? And forgive my sin, and let's get on with the show. Listen what he says. In Perek Tedva Pasuk, Pasuk Chavdalet, have it? Vayomer Shaul el Shmuel chatati. Listen carefully. Kevati pi Hashem. Okay, you're right. V'tvaracha. He blames on somebody else. Okay. Vata, right away. Sanat chatati. What's that mean? Everyone have it? Pasuk chavchad. Okay, I'm sorry, Rabbi. I sinned. Now what? Can't read my sin, but listen carefully. Veshuvi mi veshtachabal Hashem. Come back with me and do what? Bow down to God. What do you mean bow down to God? They're about to bring korbanot in the celebration of Amalek. They're about to kill Agag. Understand? Which will say, I'm not coming back with you. God doesn't want you to be king anymore. Shmuel is about to leave, and what Shaul do? Everyone knows the story. What's he do? He grabs his coat. Why is he grabbing his coat? Remember, it rips. He says, God's going to rip the kingdom away from you and give it to somebody else. But why is Shaul grabbing Shmuel's coat? What does he want Shmuel to do? If Shmuel would leave now, who looks bad? Shmuel's going to look terrible if the rabbi leaves. And what's he begging Shmuel to do? Stay for the celebration. Don't leave. Don't say it's not kosher. Come and stay. What's Shmuel going to do? Do you remember what happened? Did Shmuel come back or not? Remember, he rips his coat, doesn't he? And he says, you know what? God's going to take your kingdom away from you and give it to 12. And to 10. Remember? You're going to... God's going to rip the kingdom from you and give it to somebody better than you, to David. What's he say? In Pasuk Chavchet, "V'yomer elav Shmuel, Kara Hashem b'mamlechut Yisrael melecha u'nana l'recha tov mimecha," referring to David. And then what happens next? Pasuk Lamed. Listen to Shmuel. Shmuel. Shmuel is now frantic. Because what's Shmuel about to do? He's about to leave. Listen carefully to Pasuk Lamed. You can't miss this. Listen to Lamed. "V'yomer chatati." Who said chatati? Shmuel. Right. Now what? Vata. Listen carefully. Kabdenina. What's that mean? Kabdenina. What's Kabdenina mean? Honor me in front of who? Neged Ziknei Ami v'neged Yisrael. Who's standing? Who are they standing in front of? The entire nation and the elders of Israel. And if you run away now, who's going to look bad? I'll look terrible. Therefore, honor me now and stay. V'shuvi mi v'shtachaveti l'Hashem Elokecha. Stay with me at least and watch me bow down to God. Okay? So you don't have to daven, but at least stay here. And join the ceremony. What does Shmuel do? Take a look. You're surprised, aren't you? But Yashav Shmuel, Chrei Shaul. Yashtavu Shaul Hashem. Who comes back? Shmuel comes back and stays. He feels sorry for him, doesn't he? But what do you see? What is Shaul worried about? His kavod. No. What's so bad about why does Shaul want to kill Agag? What's that mean? If Shaul's going to kill Agag in public, what's that mean? I killed him. I did. It's my victory. Okay? And the question is, who's going to look good by this national celebration against Amalek? God's whole point was, everyone should know there's no spoils. We don't celebrate. He's our enemy. Bring nothing home. You gain nothing from all this. Got that? But Shaul can't miss an opportunity for Kabdenina. Right? He wants to look good. I beat him. And he's begging Shmuel, you can't leave. And Shmuel feels sorry for him. He comes back and stays. He says, you're going to lose your kingdom sooner or later. But he convinces Shmuel to stay. But Shmuel has to what? Has to minimize the damage. Now, Shaul could be understood as Agag's counterpart. And my army is greater than your army. And I'm stronger than you are. And therefore, I kill you. I can defeat Agag as an enemy of Israel. Or I can defeat Agag as an enemy of God. Now, what will be the deciding factor? Who's going to execute Agag? If Agag is our national enemy, and my king's stronger than your king, right? And I'm a great king, then Shaul has to kill him. If Amalek is the enemy of God for the bad behavior, then who has to kill him? The Navi. And therefore, how does Shmuel minimize damage? What's he say? I'm going to knock him. I'm going to do the death sentence. Okay. And what is Agag answer when he finds out that?